Welcome to another episode of Optional Skate Blues, our podcast where we talk hockey and focus on the St. Louis Blues. I'm Mike, here with Eric.
We're coming.
And it's Monday, April 12th, and the dust has settled on what the teams will look like post-trade deadline. So on this episode, we'll talk about our trek on the windy roads of Arkansas. We'll take a look at some of the major moves of the busier-than-expected trade deadline. And we'll look to see if Jordan Binnington and the Blues got their swagger back.
Yeah, man.
Well, we actually got together this weekend and headed down to our buddy John Paul and down in Arkansas and had a pretty good time.
Yeah, man. It was the most relaxing, calm, chill. Didn't need to worry about literally anything time that I've had in over 365. It was good getting down there. It was good coming back, and it was a good time staying down there with John and Michelle, and appreciate the space there, friends, and looking forward to getting back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we hit some golf balls at his course that he runs, you know, had a bonfire and kind of, yeah, relaxed at a place that wasn't my own house for the first time in over a year.
The golfing, for our listeners, they've heard you talk a lot about your golfing game and how much it's getting better and better. And if they've been paying attention, they've been hearing me not talking about golfing. And it showed a little bit. The Holiday Island golf course had a lot of houses, and those served more as targets than the pin. So, and John served more as a target than a pin.
Yeah, well, there is that video circulating of you smashing the ball into the abyss there.
And that's the one that we're going to look at, not the one whenever it was clearly my practice swing. Clearly.
I'm not sure which one John will send out.
And the last time I golfed, just to exclamation point, the last time we golfed was our friend Brad's bachelor party. And by the, call it sixth hole, I was scoring my card with just using emojis as opposed to numbers. And there were a lot of chocolate pudding googly-eyed emojis.
Mm-hmm. We had the shoes, though. Definitely had the golf shoes at least. So
yes, sir.
Now the trade deadline is coming past earlier today, and it actually a pretty busy deadline, especially with, you know, looming expansion draft and that flat cap. So kind of pretty good amount of movement.
There was a ton of movement, man. I think that it kind of became obvious even in the days leading up to the trade deadline that it was going to be a buyer's market. And I think that motivated teams to look at what they had and what it was going to take to fill the holes. And they thought, well, fuck, if it's only going to take me a fourth round pick to add this guy who's going to shore up my top, my top six forwards, then I gotta add him.
Yeah. And, the kind of the first trade of the week was the Islanders acquiring Palmieri and Zajac, first round pick for a first round pick in 2021, a fourth round pick in 2022, AJ Greer and Mason Jobst. I don't know how well people are valuing those 2021 picks this year. Yeah. It's kind of a lot of uncertainty with the scouting of all the players. So
yep. And I saw that too. You made that point whenever we were driving to or from Arkansas. I can't remember. And that was a really good point. And as all these trades kept filing in today, I couldn't help but notice that for as many 2021 picks, I saw just as many, if not more, 2022 picks, where it just seemed like the draft seems like it's always kind of a crapshoot. And it seems like this year, the GMs and the scouting departments are even just saying it's a crapshoot within a crapshoot. So whatever, take the pick this year, who cares? Again, buyer's market. So,
yep. And do you know anything about the guys in the trade? I mean, Palmieri and Zajac should jump in pretty well with the Islanders, give them some back end depth. And
then the Islanders weren't even done, right? Because they went on and got Corbin from the Sens. But yeah, it looked like when I first started researching this trade, it looked like that Greer has done well in the minors, and then whenever he's called up, he underperforms. But this Jobst guy looks like every year that goes by and every level that he plays, he seems to perform kind of less and less. So it really seemed more to me. And again, this is just looking at their basic stats from Elite Hockey Prospects. And it just looks like it's more about the picks than it was for the players. There are some other teams who their scouting department was really kind of on fire and picking some other players, but we'll get into those later.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you mentioned also that the Islanders did acquire Coburn from Ottawa. So just, you know, they really made some shrewd moves and kind of improved a team that was really competing for the top spot in that division right now.
Yeah, the Islanders are one of those teams that's quiet, and they started out the year really miserable, right? Barzal really wasn't scoring at any pace at all after signing his ticket, and they just couldn't figure things out. But here recently, like you said, they're challenging for that top spot in their division if they don't even have it right now. I'm checking real quick. Yeah, they're challenging Washington for it and kind of back and forth in this thing. So they're not messing around. They saw the opportunity to buy low for a lot of pieces, and they figured it can be anybody's year. Let's go get it.
Yeah, and in that whole division made moves. I mean, everybody in that division made something happen, and kind of the biggest one of them all was the Hall trade.
Yeah.
So Boston gets Hall and Lazar from the trade for a second and a fifth.
I believe that's correct from Buffalo.
From Buffalo.
They get let's look. They get a second round pick. They get Anders Bjork.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was it. If they got a fifth as well, that's not on my sheet here right now, but I wouldn't be surprised because I think there were three assets that were part of that deal. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, Hall and Lazar, second round pick, fifth round pick, and this Anders Bjork. So, man, I just Buffalo did not do well in this trade deadline.
Yeah, and you know, I think everybody's ready to slam on Adams for the way the deal went down, but he had a no move clause, so
he
got to pick his team. He's talked for a while about how he's wanted to play in Boston and thinks he'd be a good fit there. He wouldn't have to be the big option, and he could, you know, kind of be a secondary performer part of the team. Although, why did you sign in Buffalo for that if that was really what you're interested in? But, you know, so he essentially got to dictate the terms, and I mean, I guess you could see how that might have been the best that you could get for him. But, you know, seeing a couple of these guys getting firsts for, you know, who got a first?
Foligno? And Anthony Mantha.
Mantha.
He got first, second, Panic, and Verana. Yeah. So, I mean,
I liked that trade, though. I think Mantha's a player that can have an impact for Washington right now. So,
and he had term, too. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I think it was a pretty good hockey trade there.
Yeah, yep. They were basically negotiating against Taylor Hall, right? Mm-hmm. Is what Buffalo was doing. And if Taylor Hall said, trade me to Boston, then they had them you could just not include Lazar, I guess, right? And just really say, well, whatever, you can have him, but I'm not going to get anything. But I think they had to include him to get anything at all, really, mm-hmm. because they knew that they had him. They were basically all but giving Hall away because they had to trade him there.
Yep. So also in that division, the Pittsburgh Penguins acquired Jeff Carter from the Kings.
And that was one that I really liked. I thought that Pittsburgh came out of nowhere on that one. I thought that it really is going to give them the best option on their wing that they've had since Kessel went out. So,
yeah, you know, does that mean some uncertainty with, you know, how Malkin's going to recover? Is he going to, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think that this kind of some, I don't know, insurance?
I think that Pittsburgh has a history of getting guys into their system that are going to be UFAs before long, and then they just go ahead, they get them in there, and then they start pumping in points left and right, and they just say, shit, you know, why would I go anywhere else? I'm going to go ahead and Carter's got another, he's got this year and another one, and there's retained salary as part of it too, but I think he's going to be a really big part of that team, not only this year, but moving forward. He's a proven winner. He scores big goals, and whenever he's motivated, he's all the better.
Yep, and then kind of the last team that really making a splash at the deadline was Toronto. You know, as talented as they are, this is kind of the year that they look to really be moving all in and going for the cup, especially with their unique division. I think they're in an interesting spot.
Yeah, they look like they are primed. They went from, you know, potentially you could argue the favorite to trading for shoring up any holes that they had were identified and addressed, and only for draft picks. No roster player, no current prospect, draft picks. And in years when, like you said, you're unsure about the draft.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, you know, they really made some shrewd moves. You know, they gave up a first, but Foligno is a guy with a lot of leadership. I think he's the fourth player on the team to be a captain on a different team. So they've really accrued guys with some leadership, and you know, their elite talent is younger, but they're kind of rounding out with some guys who are hungry to kind of, you know, take that step to win the Stanley Cup. And you know, I think they looked a little bit at the Avalanche from last year, signing Rittich. Yep. You know, just Hutchinson, I don't know if you have a whole lot of confidence in that guy, and I don't know necessarily if you do in Rittich, but it certainly gets you some more insurance if something is to happen. And, you know, Anderson wasn't really playing great before he went out. And I don't know, did Campbell win his 12th tonight?
He did not. The Leafs lost to the Habs tonight. So ends the streak.
But, so just real smart moves from them as well to kind of bolster their depth, their leadership, and then have a backup goaltender, I think, that they can have some confidence in.
Yeah, the backup goalie is incredibly important, and they went with somebody who was steady. They didn't go with somebody who had been good in the past. They didn't go with somebody who they wondered if they had good stats and they could play in a starting role. Rittich has done that, and they were comfortable going out and moving pieces to get their guys. It seemed like they just had identified what they wanted to do. Dubois goes out there and just addressed every single need. If I were in that North division, I'd be on notice.
Yep, and so we wanted to kind of give out some awards here for the trade deadline. So what team do you think is better today this minute after the deadline than they were before the deadline.
I think that the team that is primed best to compete more now than they were going into the deadline. I'm really looking at Boston. I think the best player that's available, that a motivated version of himself. I mean, Taylor Hall won the Hart Trophy a couple years ago, man. Like, you get him out there, you get him motivated and around other leaders and other guys who can get him just supported. I think him, Lazar, and Mike Riley, I think that was an underrated pickup, man. I think that he's going to go in there and play a similar role that Hall could play on the top six. I think that Mike Riley can play on the bottom six roles. He can really, or six forwards, he can look up that group and really just kind of shore things up and take care of business there, man. What do you think? Who do you think cleaned up and made themselves even better competitors for the Cup?
I think that Florida would be my pick. I really liked the pickup from Bennett there. I think he's been unhappy for a while in Calgary, and that, you know, he'll really improve their forward depth. You know, they've been a pretty successful team. They didn't have to give up too much, and I think the big deal is them not making the deal to trade the goaltending. I think that Bobrovsky just has not been reliable enough for them this year, and just not making that move gives them some strength to going forward, and I think that they're in better shape and just kind of need to ride with it this year.
And Montour, man, I think that he was a great defenseman, an underrated guy who looked like he was way worse than what he has been just because he was on Buffalo. And I think that if you put him out there in Florida, I think that he, for whatever reason to me, speaks to the type of defenders that Quenneville had in Chicago. And I think he can go in there and he can really be that shutdown force in there and really shore up their blue line, especially, you know, with Ekblad down. I think that's a really, really strong move, and I can see why you picked Florida for sure.
Yeah, so what team do you think maybe didn't improve themselves for this year but improve themselves for the future?
I've got two toss-ups on that, man. And I'll just pick one because I think that you may have the same one or the opposite one that you could go with. So I'm going to go with Detroit. I said that there were two teams that could potentially weaponize their cap space and really just clean up. And they had the GMs to do it. I had said Detroit, and then I had said Bowman out there in Chicago, and, man, Yzerman just sat there and he was just patient and patient and patient and patient and patient and patient. And then he had his players circled that he wanted. He got a first and 21, a second and 22, a fifth and 21. He got Panic, he got Verana, and he got Hayden Verbeek. These prospects are these guys who are, he got two roster players, he got a prospect, and he got three picks. For a UFA and then a guy who he didn't have any, who he didn't see playing in Detroit beyond this, really, with Mantha. So Detroit for me, Yzerman cleaned house, and I think he's going to be ready to do it again next trade deadline. But he's going to slowly build that program back to respectability.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of teams that had a pretty good deadline for the future, and you know, you can think Chicago had a pretty good deadline, and you know, the one I think is going to be the Columbus Blue Jackets. I thought they kind of made out like bandits, being one of the bigger sellers, but you know, in total they added two 2021 first round picks, 2022 third round pick, 2022 fourth round, and a conditional seventh. So, you know, now Columbus has three first round picks this season coming up. So, You know, that could be used to draft assets or traded for a player in the off season. I think that, you know, Yarmo had a good deadline.
Yeah, and that doesn't surprise me. I looked at what he traded away and what he was able to yield, and I thought that for what he traded, and he weaponized the cap too a little bit. They were a go-between team for I think a deal involving the Lightning. I think that they were the team that ate some cap space on one of those deals. I'll look it up here in a quick minute. But yeah, they did very, very well. And they should absolutely be proud of what they put together out there in Columbus. And that shouldn't surprise anybody. Kekalainen has always done really, really well and is honest with his assets and knows when to fold and when to hold.
Yep. So how about a team that was a loser from the draft?
Man, there were... I don't want to cop out and say all the teams that should have been... The basement teams that should have been in complete and total sell mode. But there were just... Man, there's so many candidates on this. I guess I'll go with Ottawa. They traded two assets in Riley and Coburn, and they got a seventh and a third. That was it. That was their trade deadline. Everything is incredibly, terribly bad broken in Ottawa, and they still ended up making only two trades for low-level picks, and they walked away with still a couple UFAs, or pending UFAs with... Zingle and Anisimov, both those guys are 1 year till UFA. So at the end of this year, you have to think that they would have had some kind of value. They could have ate the entirety of the cap and traded those guys to some contender somewhere for something. But they just sat on hands, made two trades, and called it a day.
Yeah, my pick, I think, you know, it'd be easy to say Buffalo, right? Like, I think,
yeah,
you know, they're kind of a punching bag. But, they made some moves and tried to make some things happen. I think that my loser would be the Canadiens.
Okay.
You know, Victor Mete, they lost him from waivers.
Yeah.
And then they ended up trading for John Merrill and Eric Gustafson. I didn't really think anything great was going on there. They're fourth in that division right now and are going to line up play in Toronto in the first round. And, you know, there was maybe a shot for them to get out of that spot and make something happen. But they just, I don't think, did enough to get them out of that spot. And there's a chance that they may not make the playoffs at all. So, you know, the other part of that news was that they were included in on the Tony D'Angelo rumors about purchasing him off waivers, but he declined to terminate his contract with the Rangers. So he'd still be bought out at the end of the season, but because he didn't terminate the contract, he can't go through the waivers process to Montreal.
I find that really interesting. If somebody's willing to take a flyer on you and you can start the process of rehabbing your image sooner rather than later, I think that's kind of a no-brainer. I guess he's hoping that so much more other hockey and unrelated hockey stuff will happen between now and then that people have short memories and he'll be able to kind of do whatever he needs. But I think that was a missed opportunity for D'Angelo.
Yeah, I don't know. He doesn't seem like a guy who consistently makes good decisions. So
just go ahead and put that on the bad decision mark, and we'll add another one there, sir.
Well, speaking of bad decisions, as we recorded last week, we were gassing up the panic bus, and
I definitely was.
we were not having good vibes for the Blues, and You know, distinctly different feelings this week after the past three games, three wins, and just a different team. It looks like we're watching.
Hell yeah, man! And I'm so glad that it played out that way. No joke. Whenever the Blues started on their big tear, when they just started rattling off wins, when Bennington got in the crease after in Philly. And that whole Gloria thing started. I had just said and continued to say as they kept winning, I said, what are they doing? They're ruining their chances to get Hughes right now. They need to knock it off. These are all just throwaway wins. And the fact that I said we needed to gas up the panic bus is has got this kind of going back, man. But I think probably the most real conversation that those players had had with Blues coaching and management probably occurred after they lost to Vegas that first one.
Yeah, so they got smoked in that game, and then had a pretty intense practice on the 6th, and they healthy scratched Hoffman for a couple of games, and just, you know, really came out in that Vegas game and played a heck of a game. Just really, really got it going on the right track there.
They looked incredibly great. And I love the way that they've won. Those three wins.
You're so abusive.
Yeah, right? I love the way that they won. I love the way that they won all three of those games.
You love that they gave up 50 shots.
I love that goaltending won that game. I love that. I love the fact that the first game against Vegas, goaltending won out. I love that the next game that the Blues just put on their scoring clinic, 9-1, while we were sitting in Arkansas, great day. And then the next one, they didn't never said die. They won going into, they tied it up to go into overtime, and then O'Reilly, man, he was pumped on that backhand.
That was a pretty miraculous backhand. It was amazing that he could do it and that he could pick that corner like that. It's pretty
with the puck
ridiculous.
On edge, man.
Yeah,
the puck on edge, and he put it right where he wanted to, off the dude's face and in the net
with that crazy stick he has.
Yeah.
So, what are you thinking about the Blues right now? You know, we were panicking last week. They stumbled 7 losses in a row. Just uninspired play with a menacing schedule.
They have inspiring play with a menacing schedule. And so the Blues probably were as healthy as they had been during that stretch, during those three games. You know, Parayko had come back and he was playing good hockey. It wasn't his first game back, whenever he looked like a kid who was lost in a department store looking for their mom. Like, he was playing really good hockey. And everybody else was on that same page. So, I guess cautiously optimistic, right? Bennington is playing good hockey, really solid hockey. Husso didn't let up the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth shot in, and gave the Blues a chance to win whenever Bennington was sitting. Bennington absolutely is not bubble Bennington right now, right? That whole swagger thing, right? He got his swagger back. They look good, man. Do you think, I know on our ride, I know what you're going to say, but what do you think? Do you think it's a different team from this recording on Tuesday to last recording on Tuesday?
I think it's small sample size. I think that they certainly played better, right? You can't deny it that they played better. And, you know, we talked last week and said that, you know, these guys got to make the breaks happen for themselves.
Yep.
And it kind of seemed like that's the thing that happened. So that first game, you play a really talented team in Vegas. You hang with them, but you get 50 saves from your goaltender, which is one save away from the career Blues high in saves. So, you know, just an outstanding performance, but not any different than you kind of asked Binnington to do in 2019 in the Stanley Cup year. So,
yep.
You know, not impossible, but implausible. They get 9 goals in the next game, which
not
hasn't,
impossible to do that again, yeah, but implausible,
hasn't
right?
Hasn't happened in a long time, but you know, you beat another really good team, and then you come back on the precipice of losing that game. You know, you score with 20 seconds left to tie it up. You get the backhander with 2 seconds left to win the game. So they, you know, they're making things happen, and I think that's the vibe that if they can maintain that kind of thing, I think would help me believe. And you know, they did jump ahead of Phoenix. They do have the fourth spot right now.
Yep.
Playing well against these teams can certainly bolster your confidence, and I think that I'm certainly more confident than I was last week that they'll make a better showing for themselves through the end of the year. And I think that getting Parayko and Barbashev back, like you mentioned, is certainly a big factor for their more consistent play.
Yeah, in the scoring that they were getting, I know that, you know, 9 goals, you saw a lot of names represented on that. You saw first line, you saw second line, you saw defense. It's important to get all of those players going and firing, and that's Blues hockey. Finishing checks, winning puck battles, all those things are incredibly important to Berube's style of hockey, which is why Hoffman was sitting until he couldn't with Thomas going down. So it's, everybody looks good. Everybody's playing their best hockey. It's not sustainable like that every night, especially with the strength of schedule that the Blues have in front of them. And if they play 500 hockey, I think that that the rest of this division is going to do us some favors though too. So I once you get in the dance, man.
Yep. But you know, we talked a bit about Coach Berube. Is he going to get credit for kind of instigating Binnington to get back to his best game? Because it seemed like he poked him, maybe chirped him a little in that interview, and it seemed like it might have really sparked something in him.
Immediately. I mean, as soon as I saw that, as soon as Binnington says, you know, Panger asks him about, well, what about Wallman getting his first goal? And Binnington just... yeah, you know that wall man, he showed a lot of swagger. Oh man, that was a fuck you. Like that was to the capacity crowd of, you know, whatever 2,400 people in Enterprise, that was a hey, Coach Berube, fuck you. And I don't think Berube gives a shit. If Binnington's stopping the puck, and if every single time that Binnington walks by Berube, he's got to kick him in the pills, but he wins that game, or he goes out and makes 50 saves, Berube will take the shot to the pills. You know, I think he does not care. And I think Armstrong probably went in there too and was real with all these guys leading up to the deadline. Win or I'm going to start trading that guy. I'm going to trade that guy. I'm going to trade that guy. And I think those very real conversations, unfortunately, it took till almost literally the 11th hour for the team to start coming together and playing like a team. But they're coming together, they're playing like a team, they're uniting around each other. And if that just means that they're vilifying Berube for a little bit, or if Benner's got a chip, have your chip, win me a cup, I don't care.
Now, you know, we talk about O'Reilly and we see that next that goal winning in the game, you know, kind of living up to the C on the chest. But Is Binnington kind of the leader for this team, do you think? Or do they seem to go, you know, his way, and this seems like they're working behind him right now too. So
that's a really good question. I've always thought that goaltending in the NHL was just so incredibly important, and that if you didn't have somebody who was confident and kind of at least a quiet leader or lead by example in your net, that you were going to be in for a rough year. I don't think that it's necessarily him driving the bus, but I think that that he's definitely riding shotgun and given the directions and that stuff. I do still think that it's O'Reilly's team. But Binnington can't be far behind. He can't be discounted, considering he's going to get the lion's share of the starts, and just how critical having an overperforming or at least performing goaltender. What do you think, man? You posed the question. Do you think it's that Benner's the driving force?
Maybe he's the spiritual leader of the team, you know, and O'Reilly's the guy doing the work, because, you know, they seem to follow O'Reilly's lead and, you know, doing all the drills, and, you know, he's the first guy there, last guy to leave, and just works as hard as anybody you'd ever seen. And then, but, you know, they love Binnington's emotion, right?
Yeah.
You know, you remember him getting in the little scrap when he gets pulled, and, you know, that's not the first time that that's happened either. And, you know, you think back on kind of some other goaltenders that played with that level of passion or kind of, you know, like Belfour, Waugh, Brodeur, know,
keep saying those names.
Heck of a guy to be compared to, right? But
yeah,
but just,
Hasek,
you know,
was a little crazy.
Yeah, those little fiery guys. And I think that inspires some confidence in your team. And I think that, you know, the level of play that he is capable of kind of helps to shore it up the other way too. I think, you know, you get a 50 save game from the guy, and you know, overall I think that he's played better than his stats have shown this year, but not great stats. And I think that the team kind of owns up to a little bit of that. And you know, the play of Wallman and Parayko, I don't think can be understated.
Agreed.
Kind of in this recent, you know, goalie success that they've had
Surge,
over this past four or five game stretch. So just, you know, having him back there, I think he's one of the strongest defensive defensemen just in the entire league, and he really adds a lot of solidity to the defense. And playing with Wallman, it seems like it's worked out well for him, for both of them. You know, he just seems reluctant to take those offensive attempts in the zone, and Wallman seems more than eager to make up for it, and is starting to get a couple of goals and points in the last three games. So
I think so, yeah. And that's going to breed it, right? And I think I like how you said kind of a spiritual leader, and I think that's a good way to view it. And I think also it's somebody who you can look at and you can say, he's endearing, right? He's endearing to his teammates, and that kind of fire. If you're like, you're jabbing your buddy who's sitting next to you on the bench, if we're on a team and if one of our goalies is going out there and just getting after somebody, you know, you're going to get out there and you're going to skate maybe a little bit harder. You're going to jab him. You're going to jab the guy sitting next to you on the bench, talk about him, and get a little bit fired up. So if Berube firing up Binnington fires up the rest of the team, get fired up and go out there and skate. Put some pucks in the back of the net. Put a guy into the third row. Win a puck battle. I don't care. Whatever does it.
Yeah, and you've been kind of looking for something to happen with Berube here, right? You know, it hadn't been looking great for him. It seemed like the rest of the league is, I don't know, catching up to the Blues tactics or their strategies, and maybe we weren't evolving fast enough to the rest of the league. But if this is the thing that sparks your team to get him back to that 2019, early 2020 recipe. Keep your finger on that button.
Yep, I'm in.
Now, the Blues didn't do anything at the trade deadline. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of talked about this on the ride back from Arkansas, man. He was only benched for two games. Mm-hmm. I think that Armstrong could still say that bringing Hoffman out of the press box for Thomas was a one for one and was similar enough to a trade in that instance. I mean, it's, it's not one of those prolonged injuries whenever GMs usually say that. Getting this guy back from injury is really just like making a great trade. But I think that they didn't want to spend any assets. I think the majority of their prospects or players are currently in the NHL, so they know that they need to replenish the cupboard. And I think that we are looking at some juggernauts across the league. And within our own division, we're sitting staring at two of them. And just thinking that this year is kind of a house money year. You know, the expansion draft's coming up. The Blues are on a winning streak, yeah, but at the same time, you don't need to add to the team, I don't think, at that point. I just think that everything point into the smart play, the safe play. The Blues have been the second highest, cap up against the cap all year. So even if we were going to bring somebody in, we were going to have to give additional assets to a secondary team to absorb salary, B, have that give additional assets to that team to absorb all the salary, or C, we were going to have to move a roster player from our team to their team in order to do that. And we didn't have any players like the Panthers did that they sent to help me out here, Chicago, mm-hmm. right? We didn't have any players to send like that, whether it was just dead cap space. So I think that we're in a good place, and no move was the right move. What about you, man?
Yeah, I think that one of the big parts of the deal was what player do you get, and is it a one season deal? Because then with the expansion draft, it's kind of going to mess up who gets exposed in that too. So
yep.
It was such a fine line for them to go. I think that they might have still put Hoffman on the trade market if Thomas doesn't get injured though. Cause he was being scratched until that point and then got back in the lineup because of the Thomas injury. They said they're going to look at it weekly. So, it doesn't seem like they have a good handle on that, and having Hoffman kind of helps to fill that spot. So,
yep.
I think that if they were going to do anything, it probably would have been there, or maybe look at a backup goalie.
The backup goalie would have been nice, honestly. But Hoffman, I kept thinking about Hoffman getting traded, and who would have been your better? What are you going to trade Hoffman for to get another caliber player similar to Hoffman to fill in for other players? It's Hoffman was better than anybody you could have traded for to do what you needed Hoffman to actually do. Just motivate him. And, he went out and put in two PPGs last game. So we don't have a large enough sample size of him maybe pissed off too. Maybe Berube shitting his Cheerios. I don't whatever. Whatever gets him motivated. So let's go. Let's drop the puck here before too long. We didn't get our game here tonight against Minnesota for all the right reasons. We didn't get our game here tonight. So let's wait for our next one, puck drop, and go from there.
Yep. Now, Eric, on our way back from Arkansas, well, I guess on our way to Arkansas, but we came across a business that we had some questions about the quality of the name of the business. So it was a child care center.
Which, they're great, right? Yeah. All child care centers, wonderful places. Gotta get yourself out there and known and heard in your community and just have a catchy name to the point where people think child care, your business name.
Yeah, they had a colorful building.
Sure. And then a lot of primary colors, yeah.
Yeah. But the name of the business was A Touch Above Child Care.
And we thought maybe not the greatest, right? Like any childcare really that uses the term touch anywhere in it is probably you want to steer clear of that.
Well, they're definitely better than the A Touch Below childcare,
yeah, right?
but just, you know, we thought that they definitely could have gotten some better marketing and picked a better name, because clearly that one was.
Ew, what's that smell?
It's this week's installment of Hot Garbage.
Yeah, buddy, so the Touch Above, it definitely hot garbage. The place that had the, what was it, the end-of-life care, right? There was there was a place that had end-of-life care and mattress sanitizing and cleaning, like, in the next building, adjacent, attached. Mm-hmm. I mean, one-stop shopping, I guess, but maybe not the best look from a distance. Anyway, we're both going to throw some hockey-related hot garbage out here this week, and mine is just the sellers that didn't sell. I alluded to some teams earlier, whenever I kind of called Ottawa out, Anaheim, Vancouver, and Dallas. I don't know who they think that they're kidding by not selling. I know that Vancouver traded a couple assets. I know that Anaheim traded a asset. He's my favorite name to say, Yori Hakipana, Hakipana, Hanky Panky, Anaheim traded Hanky Panky. But, you know, Dallas didn't make a single move. So that tells me that they're thinking that they actually have faith in their team right now. And you just got to look at the standings and know that a team like Dallas could have sped up and kind of rebuilt on the fly, like New York started to do a couple years ago. And Dallas, just between two COVID stops and now ice storm stoppage.
Yep.
And you just look at all the circumstances that you're presented with, and the fact that you want to double down, or at least not admit, you know, Chicago was pure sellers, and they're above Dallas. So,
and we were listening to something on the way, and they were joking about Dallas that they were aggressively trying to just stay at 500 for the season. So I think right now they're like 15-15-6. So just,
they're 15-14-11.
There you go.
Like, they're trying to straight line. They're just trying to have the same across the board. So, and Columbus was real about themselves too. And they're 2 points underneath. Granted, Dallas has 4 games in hand on them, but anyway, Anaheim should have been massive sellers, and just all these teams that didn't take an opportunity. And I guess it takes two to have a trade partner, right? But it seemed like at least they could have gotten some return on some expiring investments.
Yeah, I know you were hoping that Getzlaff was going to get traded.
I was, man.
And it sounded like that the only place he approved was Vegas, and they just couldn't make it happen with the finances. So,
yeah. Well, most of those teams have at least some cap space that they could have weaponized. And just, even if you're just the side piece that picks up the bill, you had an opportunity to be something and to get something. So, in what could be for many teams a wasted season, and it seems like a wasted opportunity within a wasted season. So for that reason, Vancouver, Anaheim, Dallas, Ottawa, you are most definitely my hot garbage.
Ooh, I got a little of Vancouver in my hot garbage.
Hey, let's hear about it.
Well, you know, there's plenty of deals that won't go right at the deadline, but, you know, I think some of the deals at the deadline that were the most harmful are going to be the re-signings.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were talking about Vancouver. They just re-signed Tanner Pearson for a 3-year extension at $325 million. Over the year as the AAV. So going into this season, they turned down Tyler Toffoli for 3 years at $425 million. Tanner Pearson has 11 points total. Toffoli has 19 goals and 30 points. That's top eight in the league in goals.
Oh, man.
And, you know, the Canucks have had an issue recently with spending large money on average to below average players. You know, it felt like the Blues got into that bit for a while where it seemed like everybody was signed for 3 years for $325 million. It was Berglund,
it was like,
and
Oshie, Berglund, Sobotka,
Laterra,
all those guys.
So, you know, they just have too many guys right now on Vancouver in that same situation. So there's, you know, Virtanen and Antoine Roussel, Louis Erickson, Jay Beagle, Tanner Pearson. So guys that are just bottom six, maybe middle six forwards that are just have unnecessary tenure and unnecessarily high contracts.
Yeah. Not giving them a chance to really play up to that contract, especially whenever they're, many of them aren't currently playing up to that contract, right? And the idea that a bad trade, like it seems like almost panic signing on those days, right? Like, but a panic signing comes with term.
Richard
and that's
panic?
The problem. Richard Panic?
He
panic
got
at a disco? Panic signings, that comes with term. They're never going to have a single year signing on trade deadline. Mm-hmm. So if you trade for a bad pending UFA and you trade a prospect or you trade a pick, you may have never really known that prospect, or you never really knew if you were going to get that pick with that pick, right? Mm-hmm. That player with that pick. So it's easier to explain it away. And you're saying like, well, our team, we got an asset and we kind of went for it, you know? But if you're re-signing Iofoli for term, which by the way, I think was a good trade. I think was a good signing.
Yeah,
I think
four for four, right?
Yeah. Great trade. Great signing. Team friendly. And I think that's going to look like a friggin' bargain at the end of it. But anyway, for that example, you're just getting more of an already known commodity, and usually you might be signing them at their peak value, and you're just thinking, what a bonehead signing. It seems like a panic signing. Just either know that you're going to trade them or hope that you're going to sign them. You don't have to sign them on that day. I feel like probably as much, that's not fair to say that as much bad money is spent on January 1st or July 1st or whatever is spent on trade deadline, but it's probably the second biggest day. You know what I mean? So
yeah, and I don't know if any great deals happen at the trade deadline for the most part either. I think it's a little bit trumped up. But you know, another bad re-signing also was Scott Laughton with Philly, 5 years for $3 million AAV.
Yeah.
So he's a former first round draft pick in 2012, really has lived short of their expectations, is on a bad team that's slumping that, you know, I don't know when they think they're going to turn it around, but it doesn't seem like they're doing anything immediate to fix it. So, you know, but Laughton, his career bests are 32 points and 13 goals. So, you know, really long term, 5 years for a guy who's going to be 31 at the end of the term, 'cause he's 26 already. and just hasn't performed, hasn't lived up to expectations. It just really seemed like a time when a bridge deal would have made a lot of sense. Why sign a middle six forward to a 5-year term when he hasn't, you know, developed as desired, and he's going to be aged out of the contract by then. So,
and that's what I was going to say, man. I'm looking at the roster right now for the Flyers, and they don't have hardly anybody in their lower 20s, or nobody. They have nobody in their teens. Mm-hmm. Carter Hart's the youngest guy on their team right now. Carter Hart and Nolan Patrick at 22, but they've got a lot of guys in their mid 20s, if not early 30s, and they would have had a really good chance at getting some youth in there too. And admitting where they're at. So yeah, I don't see where they're hoping they're gonna go. They've got a couple guys who are some aging superstars, and Giroux. I wouldn't say superstars with Voracek, but he's historically been a pretty prolific goal scorer. But yeah, man, just some boneheaded signings, some panic signings, and they'll probably bite him in the butt later.
Yep. So thank you to all of our listeners for joining us this week. It is fun hearing from people that listen to the podcast. So please reach out to us through our social medias. We would like to thank Jeremy, as always, for the music. And also want to shout out Greg and Nicole. RIP to DMX and Eric.
Yeah, I want to give a quick shout out to anyone and everyone for not giving me shit about the editing on the last 3 episodes or so. And I'm glad that that's going well enough, or hopefully you haven't noticed a drop off in production, too big of a drop off in production from whenever, we had some professional editing going on here. Right. So, and I also wanted to give a quick shout out to Jeff, who said that he got back into listening to the show, said that he loved the crossover episode with Nerd is the New Cool. And he said he wanted more Star Wars talk, which I am always glad to oblige. Jeff, just for you, buddy. Whenever Anakin talks to his mom's grave, he says, I'll never let somebody who I care about die ever again. I'll always make sure that I take care of him. So, man, just even foreshadowing right there. But yeah, thanks, Jeff, for tuning back in, and everybody for not giving me crap for editing.
What about a thing that happened in a good Star Wars movie?
In a good Star Wars movie? Man, I could go with Rogue One. I absolutely loved me some Rogue One. I know that can maybe be polarizing, but I thought that was a perfect, just kind of flash in the pan. Everyone had to die in that movie because they were never referenced again. And I thought that was really, really well done. It had everything that you wanted, pseudo Jedis, or force sensitive people, I guess you could say, that would have been Jedi if the Old Republic were around, and AT-AT walkers, Darth Vader just getting real and not being all clunky. Oh man, we don't have enough time, Mike, to get back into this.
Force sensitive, is that like gluten sensitive?
Savannah's gluten sensitive, but yeah. No, force sensitive. It's like, you know, I can't.
You get itchy when you're around somebody with too much mitochondria. Midichlorian.
Ah, oh, shut the fuck up. Oh man, we mitochondria. Oh god, you remember whatever you called me, uncultured swine? Whatever I said about the pizza episode. Whenever you were listing off ingredients, you, sir, are a Star Wars your poodoo. I'll go with that.
I see. Well. If you like the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get podcasts, and tell a friend. Let us know what you think about our Star Wars takes, because we're always looking to grow and meet new people to talk Blues hockey with. So check us out on our socials. At Facebook, we're Optional Skate Blues. Check us out trolling the Lake Stevens Facebook group.
Well, that's for, I can't wait to talk about that next
episode.
I'll say
us in quotation marks because it's certainly not us. But you can check us out on Twitter at @BluesSkate. And then, as always, let's go Blues!
Let's go Blues! There is some good developments in the West Lake Stevens. Lake Stevens. Back and forth.